Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington, D.C.
So 110 is a big number, and that's what they are celebrating over this weekend.
South Africa's ruling ANC celebrates its 110th year anniversary Saturday.
The daughter of the current president, Dr. Lazarus Chakwera, should not take this position, not because she is the daughter of the president, but because the president himself publicly announced that he had not appointed her.
Malawi's president comes under criticism as his daughter joins the Malawian embassy in London.
He alluded that it was a need to think of changing the candidate for the presidency in 2025. That statement angered Her Excellency Samia Suluhu Hassan, and I think that is the point of departure, started from there.
And the Speaker of Tanzania's Parliament resigns following a fallout with President Samia Suluhu Hassan. We'll have an analysis. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. In South Africa, the ruling African National Congress, or ANC, is celebrating its 110th anniversary of its formation on Saturday. Events of the celebration are taking place in Limpopo province. This, as many observers say, the party is battling deep divisions among its rank and file. They say the party is divided along factions of Jacob Zuma and the current president, Cyril Ramaphosa. It also comes as a judicial commission released the first part of its investigation report on state capture. It detailed how some senior officials of the ANC benefited from corruption. Analysts say the party appears to have lost its luster and appeal to the younger generation, which they contend, if not immediately addressed, could weaken the ANC's future political prospects. For the latest development, I read Tinyiko Maluleka, a senior researcher fellow at the University of Pretoria Center for the Advancement of Scholarship.
So the ANC has the distinction of being the oldest liberation movement and the oldest political party which fought for independence in this country, but certainly on the continent as a whole. So 110 is a big number, and that's what they are celebrating over this weekend. But it is also important because for many years now, the ANC have created a convention or a tradition in terms of which they issue out a statement on the day of their birthday, which is called the January 8th statement, because the ANC was founded on the 8th of January 1912. Sadly, it's important because it's a ruling party, one of the few liberation movements that have maintained power for as long as the ANC has done.
Well, Professor Muleleka, some people are suggesting that as a liberation movement that led South Africa to black majority rule or democracy, as it were, is losing its luster. Is this what is prevailing on the ground at the moment?
Well, I think there are several warning signs all around us. One of the most recent warning signs of danger is the November local elections that we have just had. So in that local election, for the first time, the ANC fell below 50%. And that tells you how much disillusioned its membership is. And of course, there's a lot of consternation at the moment because the State Capture Commission of Inquiry has just released the first part of its report. And that points to ANC complicity in the culture of corruption that has taken root.
There are sharp divisions within the ANC, some suggest, including the Ramaphosa wing and the Jacob Zuma wing. Can they use this period of 110-year existence to change course?
Yeah, I don't know if you saw the piece that I wrote for one of the local media houses, which was published today, which is titled something. Well, it's really a satirical piece where I suggest, I imagine what the late Archbishop Desmond Tutu might have said to the ANC on occasion of the 110th occasion. I don't know if you have seen that. And in it, I suggest that, Tutu would not, would suggest that the ANC undergoes a fundamental introspection where everything about its character, about its components, such as branches, regions, and everyone, everything is rethought. Because at the moment, the ANC that we have is actually many ANCs. It's not one ANC. And the problem with the many ANCs is that the many ANCs keep changing shape as new leaders emerge, new factions emerge.
Do you think the ANC is a party redeemable to retake its attractiveness or luster to ensure service delivery for the people of South Africa?
Yeah, the problem is that the people of South Africa no longer want to hear words and promises from the ANC. They are no longer interested in an ANC that is on a publicity drive to correct its image or to redeem its integrity by means of heads and words and campaigns and advertisements and so on. If ANC does that, it will have absolutely no effect. The only way the ANC can redeem itself is by practically beginning to do the things that it has so far failed to do. Things such as basic delivery of services to people in the communities where they live. Things such as addressing the land question, which has not been addressed for a long time. Fixing the economy, solving the problem of energy, which is getting out of hand.
Tinyiko Maluleka is a senior research fellow at the University of Pretoria Center for the Advancement of Scholarship. He spoke with me from South Africa's capital, Pretoria. In Malawi, critics of the government are demanding answers from President Lazarus Chakwera over his daughter's position at the Malawian embassy in London. Their demands come after the president's daughter, Violet Chakwera, officially took a post in the United Kingdom. Critics say the appointment of the president's daughter, who has no foreign policy experience, is nepotism, a practice they say the president sharply condemned as opposition leader in parliament. Reacting to the criticism, Chakwera denies making the appointment. He maintains that he only appoints top envoys to the country's missions abroad. But the critics say the president has failed to explain the circumstances that led to his daughter's job at the foreign ministry. For the latest development, I reach political commentator Job Piri, a former lecturer at the University of Livingstonia.
Generally, Malawians have reacted that the daughter of the current president, Dr. Lazarus Chakwera, should not take this position, not because she is the daughter of the president, but because the president himself publicly announced that he had not appointed her daughter on any ambassadorial or diplomatic office. after people had access to some information about her appointment, people talked about it to be a nepotic sign of Jaquera's administration. But he refused, after he had gone to London and he came back, he refused that his daughter was not appointed on that diplomatic position. And on the same, he also fired Brian Banda. And Brian Banda is no longer the secretary to him as a press secretary to the State House now.
George, yes. some people are suggesting that if Violet Chakwera is qualified and she is a Malawian citizen, then she should be free to occupy any position in government. What do you say to that?
Exactly. That is true. And even Malawians do believe that. But why did the same president say that he did not appoint the person to the ambassadorial position? If indeed she qualifies, yes. But why did the president say he did not appoint her to the position? Who has appointed her on that position now? That's the argument that Malawians are putting forward. Secondly, if indeed she went through all the processes and procedures for the recruitment of such an office, then it should be a public information how...
According to the president, he is mandated to appoint envoys or high commissioners to represent him and his government to the rest of the world, and that he did not appoint his daughter. Isn't this enough reason or explanation?
I don't think it is. Maybe from Western language it may be, but from Malawian language it may not be. Because whether Chakwera appointed a Malawian or whether Chakwera appointed his daughter, the answer is the same. It is his daughter. That is the question Malawians are arguing. So it is his daughter. If it was independent body making the appointment other than him, then they would leave that as to Malawian. But because it is him appointing, then the issue of saying he has just appointed Malawian and not his daughter, it doesn't make sense to Malawians, because whether it is a Malawian or his daughter, it is his daughter. And he's a Malawian. That's the issue.
So do Malawians want the president to call back her daughter since she officially took her position at the Malawian embassy in London on Friday?
I don't think Malawians are urging Chakwera to call his daughter back. I don't think that's the position of Malawians. But the Malawians just wanted a clear statement. And even if Chakwera would accept that he has appointed his daughter, and his daughter is a Malawian, and she has qualified for that position, if she can make that public and not as a matter of political argument, everyone will understand. But Chakwera is refusing to make the public statement where he can accept that indeed, her daughter has been appointed on diplomatic position. At the same time, everyone knows Chakwera is a Malawian and all his children are Malawians or so. No one will argue on the position of whether Chakwera has appointed a Malawian. No one will argue on that one. It is very clear Chakwera is a Malawian and all his family members are Malawians. No one has an argument over that. At first, he refused to say that he has appointed his daughter, instead of making a statement clear at that time. That's why now it's a big argument publicly here.
Some people are suggesting that President Chakwera appears to be in a fix because of his criticism of the former president in his administration. Is that the situation on the ground, George?
Yes. That's very true. You know, even Chakwera himself, made a statement in Parliament when he was the leader of opposition, accusing the former president for appointing his relations to diplomatic offices. He made argument in Parliament. And now, why should he feel at a fix now when people are arguing the same as he did with the former president. Why is it an issue to him now? Then if he were very careful, looking at what he argued in Parliament when Peter Mutharika was the president, it would be very good at this time for him to make sure that he doesn't step on the same trap that he had set himself ahead of the position that he occupies now.
George Peary is a political commentator and former lecturer at the University of Livingstonia. He spoke with me from Nzuzu, Malawi. In Zambia, an opposition parliamentarian has petitioned the IMF, demanding full disclosure of the agreement it signed with President Hakainde Hichilema's government. Bowman Lusambo from the main opposition Patriotic Front, or PF, officially handed a petition to Prayer Sharma, the IMF's resident representative in the capital Lusaka, Thursday. The legislator says to ensure transparency and accountability for all public engagement, the International Monetary Fund must fully disclose the terms of the deal with the government in Lusaka. He called on the IMF not to approve the accord until its details are made public. But critics say the petition is a publicity stunt to thwart the new government from resolving the many economic challenges Mr. Sambo's previous administration failed to address. They express disappointment in the lawmaker for undermining what they say are pragmatic steps the Hichilema government is implementing to improve living standards. They also say Mr. Lusambo's action is unpatriotic and regrettable. But parliamentarian Bowman Lusambo tells me that his actions in support of transparency and accountability are in the best interest of the public.
We were compelled to hand in our letters because our government have been hiding the information concerning the agreement which they have with IMF.
Why are you saying your government is hiding the agreement it signed with the IMF? What proof do you have?
I'm a member of parliament, and when the government is contracting any loan, the loan which has got some strings attached, as a transparent government, you need to open up to the people. We have gone through IMF before in the 1990s under the Second Republic of President Frederick Titus Jacobo Chiluba, may his soul rest in peace. The president by then, Frederick Titus Jacobo Chiluba, he came to the stakeholders, and these stakeholders are the Zambian people. And he asked the Zambian people if they are ready to suffer with them, if they are ready to adjust their belts so that we can engage other stakeholders like IMF to help us by then. And the people of Zambia agreed with the president by then, Frederick Titus Jacobo Chiluba, contrary to what this government is doing. We wanted to know from parliament, we asked the question to the minister in charge of finance in our country, and they failed to explain to us, even parliamentarians.
Some people are saying that your petition to the IMF country representatives basically is a calculated attempt to thwart the efforts of this government to right the wrongs of your administration, which they said failed to address the myriad of economic challenges facing the country currently that they are trying to fix. How do you respond to that?
Far from the truth. Far from the truth. We started the negotiation with IMF under President Edgar Chagwalung. We were setting to reach the agreement with IMF because of some conditions which IMF were putting on table. And we told them, we can't go on like this because it will be killing our people. Remember, the 1990s IMF program, I can assure you that we have lost a lot of people because the companies which were liquidated, the people failed to get their money, and they were sent into abject poverty, and they ended up dying. And we have told the country representative here that we have got no more grave sites, no more grave spaces in our country. That's why we want the IMF to be transparent. The way they have been informing other lenders like China to be transparent with the loans which they're giving to Africa and the countries like Zambia. But so for us, we're just doing our work.
In your petition, some Zambians are saying, you said the IMF should not, you know, give money to the government until it makes public the agreement you signed with the IMF. Isn't this undermining the government?
No. Having seen what happened in the 1990s, it would be very stupid for me and many others to accept going through what we went through. It would be very stupid for us. I have been receiving information from IMF country representative here that no, since 1990s, IMF has done, they have gone through a lot of reforms. Yes, quite all right, they've gone through so many reforms, but the core business of IMF remains the same. Remember that most of our companies, such as the mine and many other companies, went under because of that program which we had with IMF. So for us, what we want to do, we are not undermining our government. We want, actually, we are helping the government. We are helping the government to come out in open. We are helping IMF to come out in open and tell the world, tell the people of Zambia that the agreement which we have made, the conditions are ABCD.
Bowman Lusambo is a member of the Zambian Parliament. He spoke with me from the capital, Lusaka. In Uganda, the defense attorney for Kakwenza Rukira Bashaija, an author and a government critic, says the police are defying a court ruling that ordered his unconditional release. Aaron Kiza says he presented the directive to the police, but they have refused to release his client. Mr. Rukira Bashaija, who was arrested on December 28, is charged with offensive communication under the Computer Misuse Act against President Yoweri Museveni and his son, Lieutenant General Muhoozi Kainerugaba, a commander of land forces. Charles Tweeney, spokesperson for the Criminal Investigations Directorate, is quoted by local media saying the government critic would be presented in court on Tuesday. But defense attorney Kiza says the police have failed to bring his client to court to face the charges despite repeated promises to do so. He tells me that it is unacceptable for the police to continue to disobey court order.
Nothing, because they are in defiance mode. They have defied the court order with impunity and they are still not producing our money in court, contrary to their earlier promises.
So what's the next step for you?
We have requested court to command them to bring him in court since they don't want to release him. And also we may cite them for contempt of court. That is the step. We are also engaging the diplomatic channels to impress it upon them that they can't continue to illegally hold the citizen of Uganda, because it violates both our constitution and international law.
So you are calling on the international community to pressure the authorities to adhere to a court ruling or begin the court process?
To respect the court order, to respect the due process, to respect the rule of law, and to respect both our national and international law regarding the holding of detainees. Because what is happening is detention without trial. That is clearly outlawed.
But if you cite them for contempt and the police, you said, are still defying a legitimate court order, will this work if you go ahead and cite them for contempt? Will that work?
Because that means that we are no longer dealing with the entire police, we are dealing with individual errant officers who are in defiance mode.
I understand the wife of your client has also sued the police. How effective will this be?
I mean, everything is helpful that adds on to the pressure to the police, and not just police, but the military. Remember, it's a joint operation, the police and SFC. So we will welcome all efforts to exert pressure on the government of Uganda to do the right thing, which is follow the laws of Uganda and stop any post-48-hour detention.
The spokesperson for the Criminal Investigations Directorate, Mr. Charles Twini, said they will present your client to court on Tuesday. That appear not to have happened. But the charges against him include offensive communication under the Computer Misuse Act against President Museveni and his son, Lieutenant General Muhoozi Kainerugaba, who is also the commander of the land forces. What do you think of these charges?
Yeah, these are clearly bogus charges. They, you know, they have no future in a court of law, competent court of law. That's why they are elongating illegally his pre-trial detention. What is offensive about those tweets? I mean, the gentleman just cited the medical condition. It's not a legal problem. Or basically, the medical condition. It's not a legal problem. And telling someone that he's a drunkard may annoy them, but that's not a legal issue. So they should stop wasting our time.
The Ugandan police have often been accused of routinely disregarding court orders and often rearrest suspects that have been released on bail. The Attorney General, Kriyowa Kiwanuka, warned the police to desist from such impunity. Why does this continue?
It continues because they talk about respect for human rights from Attorney General is just rhetoric, nothing much. He has not actually moved to Ripley to apprehend any officer. They have not moved to discipline any officer who disregards court orders. So they cannot expect police officers to take them seriously when themselves are not taking their word seriously. So until the Attorney General goes beyond letter writing and starts initiating the disciplinary proceedings in various fora against officers, that will not stop.
But do you think the Attorney General has the mandate or the capability to discipline errant officers when the system or the errant officers, so to speak, are taking orders from above?
Attorney General, one can refuse to defend errant officers, and they have a habit of defending them whenever they are accused or whenever legal proceedings are initiated against errant officers. Attorney General always defends them. So that can stop. Secondly, Attorney General can simply advise the relevant police department, the tribunal, to initiate these proceedings, and they will do so. This Attorney General is very powerful, he's with them too, and he has a special connection to the president, and he has both the legal mandate and the political wherewithal to positively influence the conduct of police. And he has not done so. We expect him to do so in the coming days, but there is no indication that he will.
Aaron Kiza is defense attorney for Kakwenza Rukirabashaija, an author and a government critic. He spoke with me from the Ugandan capital, Kampala. Meanwhile, Uganda's main opposition party, the National Unity Platform, or NUP, says the continued refusal of the police to respect a court order to release detained government critic Kakwenza is a demonstration of the breakdown of rule of law. David Louis Rubogoya, General Secretary of the NUP, says the refusal of the police to release Mr. Kakwenza is a violation of his fundamental human rights. He also welcomed as a step in the right direction a lawsuit filed by the spouse against the police. Eva Basima, wife of the detained government critic, has filed a suit against the Inspector General of Police and head of the Special Forces. The Ugandan police are routinely accused of refusing to follow court orders, despite a recent caution by Attorney General Kiriowa Kiwanuka for them to obey the law. David Louis Rubungoya tells me that Uganda's international development partners must speak up forcefully against what he says is the continuous violation of human rights in the East African country.
Kakwenza, of course, was abducted by the military and police and subjected to all manner of torture. And so that is the challenge. Under the Constitution of Uganda, once somebody is arrested, they must be produced before a court of law within 48 hours. It's now close to 2 weeks ever since he was arrested and kept under illegal detention. He's been kept incommunicado and not allowed access to the lawyers, his medical doctors. So NUP, of course, condemns this in the strongest terms possible. We have been speaking out about it. but also speaking to the world that this, the continued violation of human rights, should be of concern to anyone who cares about human rights, who cares about democracy, who cares about humanity. We're saying, you know, that it is illegal, it is wrong, it is morally reprehensible for the regime in Uganda to continue detaining people in this manner. And also what worries us is to see that there's less interest or even action from some of the development partners of Uganda, for example, who should be speaking out even louder about these kinds of violations.
Your leader, Bobi Wine, or Robert Kyagulanyi, said the failure of the police to free the author is a crime against humanity. Is that the official position of the party?
Torture is a crime against humanity. You know, he was taken to his home recently, and the wife said that, you know, he bore torture marks everywhere. You know, he was arrested and in boxers and everything, and his clothes bore marks of blood. So these are crimes against humanity, definitely.
Apart from raising concerns, talking to the international community, what steps can your party take in this, as your party said, struggle against impunity?
But we have been taking steps legally. You know, we've been supporting his lawyers, for example. We were in touch with the legal team. But you see that even when there's a court order ordering that the state releases Kakwenza immediately, he has not been released. You know, there's little you can do within this country, because the options you have are to go to court and or to protest. But as you know, protesting in Uganda is illegal. You cannot stage a protest. You'll just be arrested and taken to jail. So that is the situation that we have.
Are you therefore saying it is a hopeless situation at the moment?
No. First of all, the people of Uganda have been speaking out, and we continue to encourage them to speak out. And just not speak out. You know, they are, you know, living under and operating under very difficult circumstances. So we understand why there is sometimes a bit of inaction because of the intimidation and threats, etc., etc. But we are also saying that the international community, which supports the regime in Uganda heavily, needs to really, really up their game. It is extremely wrong for them to continue supporting a regime which is not shy about violating human rights with impunity.
Has your party officially petitioned some of these development partners about some what you describe as illegal detention of opponents of the administration?
But you know, Kakwenza is not the first one and is not the last. Many people remember how President Robert Kyagulanyi, how many times he has been arrested and detained. A few weeks ago, he was placed under house arrest. But you know, up to now, we still have hundreds of our people who are missing. Others are in different prisons across the country. So it's just not Kakwenza. This has been an ongoing situation, and we have petitioned the United Nations, we've petitioned the European Union, we've petitioned the American Embassy, and all other agencies that we can outside Uganda. But also within Uganda, we've gone to courts of law in Uganda, lodged cases there. So we've tried to do everything within the law.
What is the way forward for the NUP regarding what you describe as the police impunity of its refusal to obey a legitimate court order?
You know, like I said, once there's a court order and it is not obeyed, then what you do is just to follow the law. And now the wife of Kakwenza has filed another case against all these people for contempt of court because it's a court order. But you know, the law, as long as there's a breakdown of the rule of law in the country, this is what you expect. So there's a complete breakdown now of the rule of law in our country, and that's why we are struggling every day to see that we put an end to that. The situation of Kakwenza is just symptomatic of the general breakdown of the rule of law in our country.
David Louis Rubogoya is General Secretary of the Ugandan Main Opposition Party National Unity Platform, or NUP. He spoke with me from the capital, Kampala.
Hello, this is James Barton, Managing Editor and host of VOA's Daybreak Africa show. Join us Monday through Friday at 03, 04, 05 and 0600 hours UTC as we bring you the latest Africa news, features and sports. can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our mail segment by sending your comments.
Tanzania's Speaker of Parliament has resigned following recent fallout with President Samia Suluhu Hassan. John Ndugai resigned 3 days after apologizing to the president for criticizing the government borrowing. Analysts say the speaker might have miscalculated the effect of his remarks. They say he lacks the support he might have anticipated from senior members of the ruling party, which they contend forced him to resign. They also say the resignation appears to be part of the efforts by President Hassan to impose herself on the party ahead of the next general election. For analysis of the resignation of the Tanzanian Speaker of Parliament, I reach Faraja Lugumi, a lecturer at the University of Dar es Salaam.
In fact, it is expected because there was much pressure from the public concerning his statement against the decision of the president, Samia Suluhu Hassan, to secure a loan from IMF, and the loan that has been used to build schools, hospitals, classrooms, and to improve the infrastructure in rural areas. And the speaker said he was against that, and he alluded that it was a need to think of changing the candidate for the presidency in 2025. That statement angered Her Excellency Samia Suluhu Hassan, and I think that is the point of departure, started from there, and it was escalated to the point that forced the speaker to resign. And in fact, the speaker has made a right decision, because there was no way he could have left without resignation. The first thing maybe that could happen was for one of the members of the parliament to move the motion of having no confidence with the speaker in the parliament.
Was this miscalculation error on his part to criticize the administration?
Yes, unfortunately we can say this was a miscalculation on his part. Some people think he expected to have a support from some of the bigwigs or some of the senior members of CCM. Unfortunately, those he expected to support him went back and they left him alone. And that is unfortunately on his side. But the other thing is that it seems Ndugai from the beginning was not happy with the presidency of Samia Suluhu Hassan. And there were some remarks even before this one. One was about he was challenging the statement of Samia about calling herself a woman. And so he said, why are you women always saying this is the time for women, this is the time for women? You have to perform. You have to prove that you are leaders, not just saying, not just attaching your leadership to your agenda. Attach your leadership to your performance. That statement also was interpreted as the beginning of the difference between the speaker and the president. So from the beginning, it seems Ndugai didn't expect to see Samia Suluhu Hassan in the office. And this is really a miscalculation. So he was thinking he will have a support from some of the senior members of CCM, but unfortunately they have left him alone, and there are very few who will be supporting him silently, not publicly.
Some people are suggesting that President Samia Suluhu Hassan is preparing for an election and will not tolerate such so-called disobedience within the rank and file of the ruling party. And since he's a speaker of parliament, he had to be sacrificed. What are your thoughts?
President Samia Suluhu Hassan is determined, and she has shown her determination for a long time that she doesn't want any opposition from his ruling party in 2025. She wants to be the sole candidate for the presidency in 2025. And that's why every person who seems to threaten her way towards the presidency in 2025 will be fired and will be dealt accordingly within her party. Maybe we have to wait for the people from the opposition who can challenge her, but she won't be tolerant to see people challenging her within her own party. And that's why she said on that day when she rebuked or when she reprimanded the speaker, she said she was warned before that the enemies will come from her own party and not from the opposition. And that's what is happening. The people who oppose him strongly are from her own party, and she won't want to see any opposition from her own party. Rather, she would want to see the members of her own party supporting her towards achieving the agenda of being the only candidate in 2025, so that her dream comes true as the next female president of our country who will be elected by the ballot box.
Faraja Lugome is a lecturer at the University of Dar es Salaam. He spoke with me from the Tanzanian commercial capital, Dar es Salaam. And you are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. Right now, it's time for music from our African collection. My girl, many matata, body matata, mbaya. Hey, bora mdogo meni kamata, unanicheza kama karata. Yeah, tulikutana kule Cape Cape Town, paka Accra Town, downtown. Eti unasifa za kudanga na mengu anasema sijauna. Wivu umewaingia, Mungu kanionye shashara. Ndege wanashangilia, na nitakupeleka Ulaya. Wivu umewaingia, Mungu kanionye shashara. Ndege wanashangilia, na nitakupeleka Ulaya. Wakiniona wananiita kwa mdogo, bwana mdogo. Hawajui ninachofanya mimi.
Make a boss gone for my baby girl. I no go calm down. This is real loving, man. No be just fun. So Mr. Hater man, better just shun. Sweet lover, you got that text from your lover man. He won't caress ya. See you later under red dress. Bedroom bully girl, me wanna dress ya. Go go do. Yeah, them my link, but me not send them. Oh no no. Anybody hating girl, unfriend them. Go go do. Make we use this loving girl, offend them. Oh no no. If them no send us, we no send them. Baby, yeah, just run to me now. I'm in love, but you give it to me now. I'll keep up at the ranking, you know.
Wakiniona unanita
Bwa mdogo,
bwana mdogo.
Bwa mdogo,
hawajui ninachofanya mi.
Bwa mdogo,
bwana mdogo.
Bwa mdogo,
nikitema unashiba.
Bwa mdogo,
bwana mdogo.
Bwa mdogo,
Kilimanjaro napanda mi.
Bwa mdogo,
bado bwana mdogo. Shara, ndege wanashangilia, na nitakupeleka Ulaya. Wivu umewaingia, Mungu kanionyesha ishara. Ndege wanashangilia, na nitakupeleka Ulaya. Wakiniona wananiita
Bwa mdogo,
bwana mdogo.
Bwa mdogo,
hawajui ninachofanya mi.
Bwa mdogo,
bwana mdogo.
Bwa mdogo,
nikitema unashiba.
Bwa mdogo,
bwana mdogo.
Tell me what. cheche. Got something sweet to put on my ear. That's why I need to cool my stress. So, yeah.
I'm in a big mood. Girl, I feel you. I know say I love cause passing money, but I still want you. I'm in a big mood. Girl, I want you. Now only you, if you cool my bad day, nobody but. Tell me to leave my baby. Bend every night if you turn to baby. Me and you, when you wake up, girl, you splashing on me. Yeah, Lula sweat all on me. Like the design, you be dripping on me. Maybe that's why I don't feel it. Yeah.
Oh, I'm in a big mood. Call out the feel you. Something wake up cool in my body. Tell me you will do. I'm in a big mood. Call out the feel you. Something wake up. Tell me will do. Make we go disappear. Want something cold to me check, yeah. Get something sweet to put on my head, that's why. Now you just cool my stress, so yeah. Make we go disappear. Want something cold to me check, yeah. Get something sweet to put on my head, that's why. Now you just cool my stress, so yeah.
When the money done the show, send a star boy, big whiz, big daddy, enter the show. We know they mind best, you know, man, we just come, yeah, mind our own. I'll bum a walk, but I'm a bum a lot, I'm a like 20 standard, yo. We know they mind best, you know, we not gonna keep us, you know. But you, baby girl, we could ain't no solo. Nobody feel tell me to leave my baby, yo. Bend every night if it turn to baby, yo. Me and you, when you wake up, girl, you splashing on me, yo. Yeah, Lula sweat all on me, yo. Like the design, you be dripping on me, yo. Maybe that's why I don't feel it, yeah.
I'm in a big mood, call out the feel you. Something wake up cool in my body, tell me you will do. I'm in a big mood, call out the feel you. Something wake up cool in my body, tell me you will do. Make me go disappear, but something cold to me check, yeah. Get something sweet to put on my head, that's why. Now you the cool my stress, so yeah. Make we go disappear. But something cold to me, check, yeah. Get something sweet to put on my head, that's why. Now you the cool my stress, so yeah.
superstar. He want turn me to Rasta. He want turn me to Rasta. Oh boy, he want change in my star. Baby boy is a superstar.
That was music from the continent, and we hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor William Eagle and producer Mugbil Yabaru, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, if a donkey kicks you and you kick back, you are both donkeys. I'm your host, Peter Clotte in Washington. Good evening, Africa.